Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here is your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Matt Winstead in the house. Welcome to Nashville, man.
Thank you, brother. Glad to be back.
So let's go out tonight.
Yes. Yes.
Wednesday night.
Tonight is NBA. Tomorrow is Preds. Oh.
T-Bone's in the house. You gotta hold your mic or just you gotta.
I'm gonna get a lavalier.
I know we need you a lavalier for this. Actually. Tarun Agrawal, first time on the podcast.
T-Bone.
I just had to be in town.
Yes, I had to come
see your hairdo.
Had to be
quite honest with you. And your mesmerizing sign.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the Nashville's been overtaken by hockey. We're catching up, but it's been good. So this is, I'm excited about this episode because we really haven't talked much about the lab side of dentistry at all. And twofold to that is when we graduated dental school, we knew absolutely nothing about.
You guys didn't do lab work in dental school?
Well, yeah, we did. But like, I don't know. I didn't know like how you ordered from a lab or like how you like how that process worked or like how do you find a good lab or how do you, you know.
Or how do you find a good, like somebody good to set up your teeth? Like, I mean, some of the classmates.
Payman paid all his. He didn't do his set
up. That's the brown.
It is.
That's
it
the brown in us.
I needed to find somebody. Charlie, shout out to Charlie Mann.
For all
my
for God, your $100 teeth setups.
Yeah, now all my doctors, my professors are like, wow, good job. And I'm like, great. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you.
I just
Charlie.
Paid a lab to do mine.
See, you that was probably directly,
so you didn't
version.
Even go to the middle. I went to my friends. I was like, hey, sit. They're like,
no, I just went
mouse.
To a local commercial lab and just said, I need this.
No, I think
is it an Indian Iranian? He
I
took
think
a
I
one
too much.
No, I just wanted easy. They had free shipping, UPS boxes. Yeah, just shipped true. It back and forth, you know.
Oh gosh,
I'm surprised all the dental students don't do that. Like, what's keeping them from going home and shipping it to a lab?
Pride.
No, I don't think they know it. Honestly,
sure,
I didn't
know that they can do that.
They didn't know.
A lot of dental students are rule followers too. I mean, these are people who are really.
But do you know what the funny thing is? That my professors kind of knew it. Like, they're like,
oh yeah,
this is not yours. Like, you know. But at the same time, they played. They're like, oh, well, good job. You know, like I was like, man, thank you. And he kind of motivated me to like, hey, I'm going to pay Charlie more next time too.
Hey, tell us about how you met Matt. Or first off, Matt, why don't you introduce yourself to who you are.
Let's get
you
it.
Oh, okay.
And you kind of lead us off on that.
I'm Matt Winstead, Vice President of Oral Arts Dental Lab in Huntsville, Alabama. We are a family-owned dental lab. And that's all I want to say about myself.
I call them the biggest dental lab in the South. I like to call them, I don't want to say the Glibels of the South, but I really like to say they're one of the biggest in the South.
How many employees do you have, Matt?
342.
342. How many does like a big lab?
I mean,
50.
Hundreds, thousands?
50 would be a big lab.
Okay.
I mean,
are you one site?
We are one site with 320 and one site with 20, 21, 22. So there's not that many one sites our size that I know of. None, really. I think Micro maybe has, I don't know how many Micro has, but I've never heard that they had.
And your biggest site is in Huntsville?
Uh-huh.
That's the main site.
I'm sure Glidal has 1,000 on site.
They have about 4,500, but it's not all in Newport.
Well, they have like four buildings in Newport now.
They have more than that.
No, four for the lab, I'm saying.
Yeah.
They have their manufacturing facilities and everything, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you brought him up. I have a lot of respect for Jim Glidewell. I've been out there 7 times. I have his email address. He and I have corresponded a lot over my career, and he's been a mentor to me. You know, my main mentor is my dad and my family, but he's definitely been an outside mentor.
So you said it's a family owned lab. Is it?
Oh yeah.
That's how you. So your dad.
My dad started in 1970 by himself.
Wow.
Yep.
He's as a one man lab tech.
Yeah, he's an amazing dental technician. Incredible. Full
wow.
Top
Starting
to bottom.
From 1971 to now, you have 342 people.
He's very driven, more than anybody I know. He's turned 76 in June.
Oh, man. So how'd y'all meet?
So Matt, actually from my roommate, Nathan and Blaine Reynolds, shout out to both of them. Nathan Heinzen and Blaine Reynolds, Big Daddy Blaine.
They would always talk about you and how crazy you were.
Yeah, in dental school.
Yeah.
And then things turned out after graduation, I felt like I need to be a little bit more professional now that I got
this. This is the professional version?
You have no idea. I mean, we went to school in Memphis. Come on.
Yo, what else you going to do?
Anyway, so I remember in school we used oral arts.
Yeah, they still do. More now than ever.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Greg.
So how many schools are you guys involved with?
Like Greg.
Greg's cool, right?
Greg, he's a
great
guy. Yes.
I miss him.
So UAB, University of Connecticut, GRU in Augusta, Georgia, UT.
That's got to be pretty good for y'all too, because people ought to come out of there knowing the names.
Yes, Loyola in Chicago.
Yeah.
And University of Connecticut, Kentucky in Louisville.
UK and Louisville both? Nice.
It's good to work with the schools. It can be a pain, but...
How do you manage that?
How do we manage doing the
school? Schooling. The schooling. Okay, so the office, like for me, I feel like it's easy just because it's me. But then the school. Like, think about all these kids.
But there's just that many customers, right? Just like you're a customer, each one of the students is a customer.
For the most part, it works out pretty well. You know, what can be an issue is... When you went to school with some people who really didn't know what they were doing, and then you end up getting a little back and forth on stuff, and it can be an issue, but it's really good. We're very, very blessed by having the school accounts. And I think if the students have a good experience when they graduate, they kind of remember who they used.
Right. And that's a good point, because in school, I remember when we took impressions, I was so cautious because I didn't want to do it again. And I was so important. Like, it was so important for me. Like, I make sure I pack cord and make sure this impression is so good that when I take it to Greg, our lab coordinator, he would be like, okay, don't worry about it. This is good. Because he never said it's good. He always like, oh, go ahead. And
because he's a lab tech.
Right. So he was just kept doing. And then when I got out, I felt like, oh my God, I take good impressions just because of that, them kind of disciplining me back in school.
Yeah. What's difficult about dental schools is the students don't deal with the lab. They always have a mediator who is a faculty. Mm-hmm. And so the students don't learn how to view the lab as a partner. They view the lab almost in an adversarial way, because if anything goes wrong, the lab is it's the lab's fault that they're prolonging.
Whose fault could it be?
Exactly. It could prolong their graduation or screw up their class or whatever they're doing. So it would be... To me, it would be so great if the students got a chance to interact with the lab and learn how they build a relationship with the people within the lab and how they see the value you know already.
Yeah.
But you didn't learn that in school. You had to get out of school.
Exactly.
It's funny you said CIRAC actually has really helped have better communication with my lab because of that. Because all of a sudden, you know, I see... My own
you see it.
Lab work. You see, and like, I have to do my own adjustments.
Well, you all kind of do your own lab work too, right, to a certain degree.
Exactly. So now I understand a little more because I always joke about, very rarely does a lab going to send you back and be like, no, this won't work, right? Like, they're going to try to make it work and do the best they can to like get you the best of what you put shit in, shit out, you know, frankly. And so it does make you appreciate that the partnership and the communication of you know, how you want it to be versus just sending something and hoping and they get it right and, you know, it comes back right, especially with a lot of cosmetic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Part of that seeing your preps and everything on the screen, you know, versus in a little impression.
I mean, that's the thing. When the part of my approach with the lab, like the whole communication part, was when I first got out of school, I started Affordable Dentures, which we had a lab. So I would go back and see them set up denture teeth and see that whole process. So when I saw that impression, my impression was... like not good. Yeah, yeah. And I would see it right there. So when I now it comes to me where every dentist, my friends, they're like, oh, my lab sucks. I'm like, let me see your prep, let me see your margin, like, because it's not really part of it's a lot of it to me. I feel like it's a communication from our side, our dentist side. We need to do more. We got to do more for the remakes, especially when it comes to the shade guide and all this photography stuff, to communicate with them, tell them exactly what color, what things are, because you expect them to know. And that's the part where when I start working at Ford, I was like, man, this is there's a lot more to the story that I didn't see in school. And that's the part I wish, if I go back, I would like to implement that in school, at least the students to see that part.
How many customers do you think you have?
Active. We have active, we have around 1,800 to 2,000 a month. In the database, we have around 5,000 to 6,000.
So how many dentists come to visit the lab?
I would say, not including dental schools, we have tour, say people like you guys, 25 a year.
A year, so two a month. One of the things, as Payman was talking about, is going to visit a lab, even if it's not the one you use, just to go see kind of what goes in, to see kind of the impressions, the process of what goes through. It'll open your eyes to what a good lab is and what a good lab isn't, and how clean the lab is, how things come in and out, how organized they are, whether your cases get lost. And, you know, look, I think Glidewell unfortunately gets a bad name, but one of the things they have unbelievably done well is efficiencies of organization, making things more predictable. And, you know, you have to have those things to do $79, $89, $99 crowns. And I think when we as dentists complain and bitch and moan about labs, they run a business just like we do. And just like remakes cost you money, remakes cost them a boatload of money, you know, because I assume you're either paying your techs on a piece basis or a per hour basis. Every lab has a different model. So remakes cost money. I know most labs run about a 15% margin, so their margins are even lower than dentistry. So I think it would behoove each one of us to go visit a lab, a traditional lab, a removable lab, maybe an all digital lab, just to see how kind of things are run.
You know, a lot of good points have been raised. Something that we've been talking about here recently is part of what separates a good lab is the ability that the lab has to work with doctors who aren't good. And what I'm saying is, just the same way we may ship a case to the wrong account or an impression may get swapped, we're humans, but the doctors are humans too. Your staff may take a bad impression, or you may do a bad prep. Well, what separates the good labs from the average labs is the good lab will make that case work, and you will never even know you didn't really give them what they needed.
But isn't that part of the problem too?
It is, but a good lab tech can make something work and the doctor will love it, but an inexperienced lab tech or somebody who hasn't been around the block a while, they'll call the doctor and say, well, this isn't going to work. I need you to change this and that. Well, the only reason that you use a lab or use a CEREC or whatever is to make you more money. You want to use a lab who's going to cause you to make more money. So if you use a lab and they always call you and say, you need to do this and that, I got to find another lab who can do my work. And then you find somebody and they just figure out how to make it work.
But I think that's unfortunate though, to a degree though, because you could get better stuff. Because
you could.
And how much do you communicate with them? I mean, on those cases, or do you communicate much with them? Because I don't feel like, I guess that was my point earlier, was like, you don't get a lot of calls from labs being like, you don't get a lot of them sending you an impression back being like, we need another
You
impression.
Should if you work with, you know.
Well, that's right.
But I don't mean to interrupt, but I mean,
no, you kind of.
I know I do. I don't mean to, but I do. Here's the problem. We as dentists create this atmosphere that makes labs not communicate back with us. Because what we'll do is we'll say, make it work. You don't know what's going on. Yeah. You weren't there in the situation.
You don't appreciate what they're doing.
You know, but not even that. We don't have an open mind to the fact that they're a partner in the results that we get for our practices. So, you know, I think ultimately labs are gun shy because they know, as he's saying, is probably, and the reason he says that is probably because a lot of his customers come to him because they work with other labs, and the labs say, well, every time I send him something, something's not good enough. But when I'm sending it to you, I don't seem to have that issue. And to me, what I hear is the root of the problem is that we're not communicating at all. And ultimately, I believe an office doesn't need one lab. I believe an office needs multiple labs based on areas of expertise that labs have. And also, at the end of the day, you know, like I work with the local lab sometimes, and that I need for rush cases or custom shades that, you know, my patient's not going to fly to Alabama to get that done. So I ultimately, you have to be open-minded about what's possible. I didn't mean to interrupt. I told you not to give me a microphone.
Let me close on this subject, just the remake, yes, and all the stuff. One of our biggest clients, I won't say where they're at, they're in Alabama, but not the city. I would say we've had them around 15 years. And the reason that we got that account, they were sending their veneers to Glidewell. And they kept getting calls from Glidewell customer service reps. You know, we need a new impression for this veneer case. So the Glidewell sent the impression back. They turn around and sent the impression to us. We made the case and never called them. They seated it. Everybody was happy. So they start using our lab. Now, their remakes were too high when they started using our lab. Okay. It was not what the average is.
What is average?
The average? Yeah. It's like around 5%.
5% within your lab.
Yeah. But over
national average. I'm sorry to.
Oh, you'll be lucky to find out.
It's, you know, the lab is such a fragmented business.
Right.
Yeah, so many people in the mom and pops in their garages.
So anyway, some people see that too as different, like a different perspective.
But bottom line is, over those 15 years, so that doctor, he would run 15 to 20% remakes. Now their remakes are 7%, which is totally acceptable, but we stuck with them. We weren't like trying to, you know, make them change everything they're doing. You know what I'm saying? And they love us. They're totally happy. But all that to say is the experience of the technician holding the case, and that's where the rubber meets the road, is their brain. It's not the machines and the printers and all this other software and all that stuff. That's great. But it's the technician sitting there with your case in their hand and the ability to figure out how to make that thing work and not bother you with it, because your job is to be in that operatory making the next case, not talking on the phone to the lab saying, you need to redo that. We didn't get what we needed. Now, not to Rune's point, communication is huge.
It is.
It is totally huge. But it, you know, it let it be constructive. Hey, I got this case. What do you think I should do? Let's plan it together.
It is. And I want to point this out, because when I graduated, I never, because see, we were just so young out of school. We don't know how this thing works. You know, like you've been 1970s when the lab started. But see, when I got out, I started noticing that when I started seeing my lab people and the local labs and other people, when I met with the owner, I sat down and I told them how big I am on communication. Like, I want to make sure this is like right on, but I tell you ahead of time before you make it. And it was so surprising to me that all these people, like, are you sure? Like, you're actually going to put this much? Like, everybody was so surprised that how this young dentist want to actually spend time over the phone. And I get mad at my lab right now sometimes. And I'm like, why did you send it before me talking to me in front, like, because I don't want to send this back again. And it was so surprising to me that to see that nature of, oh my God, so this, it looks like dentists don't want to really spend time. They like figure it out. They send it to you, the impression, now you figure it out because I'm doing the next case.
Yeah, but payment, I think also one of your perspective is a little bit different, because the average dentist is doing single unit posterior dentistry.
That's right.
I would probably say 90% of practices, 90% of their work is single unit posterior dentistry or one to two units.
That's right.
So the, honestly, in those cases, there shouldn't be any communication.
That's right.
Hell, the shade doesn't matter to a certain degree, I guess, yeah, on most patients, right? So when you start getting into multidisciplinary dentistry and certainly more complex cases, then communication really becomes necessary, because in those situations, patients are unbelievably particular about what they want. And the other difference is, and I'll lead us along here, is that you photograph your cases. Yes. So if you ask him what percentage of his anterior teeth come with photographs, he'll tell you the answer is probably 1 to 2%.
Actually, it's more.
Like, how much more?
20%.
20%. That's still
pretty good.
But 20%. That's still. Think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. 20% is.
I mean, one out of five is, right, you're having to guess. So basically.
So otherwise, you're guessing. Otherwise, A1 you're going really off A1. Of essentially a plastic shade guide, right?
Right.
Of which is no tooth is ever a shade guide color, right?
Correct.
So there's no characterizations. There's no anatomy that you communicate that way. There's no translucence you can communicate that way. You know, all these things that you can't communicate via green or blue or Yellowstone models, whatever they're using. So it goes both ways. And then I would say also on communication, we talk about the lab to dentist communication, but then there's also the post communication of when a case does go well. Yeah. You know, because how many times is the lab tech, you know, because at the end of the day, we're talking to the manager or the owner of the lab, okay? And maybe that's your, or you're dealing with your account relationship or whoever relates to your account, right? But how often does the actual person that's doing the grunt work in your lab actually sit down and actually get to hear, hey, you did a great job, or get a message from your patient saying thank you? And those are the things that motivates people and makes people like your work. And
yeah, I try that's to true.
Send after pictures.
Yeah, like, you should.
Look how
we publish
good this
the
work.
Heck out of that. Internally in our lab, we have TV screens throughout the lab. Like, we have pictures of payments cases, and I never tell them this, in our lab on big flat screen LCDs, you know, at the elevator when employees are waiting, they get to see the work that they've done in the mouth,
it's
you know?
It's very motivational.
It is.
Very.
I mean, it's motivational to our patients, correct?
Yes, yes.
It's motivational to many of us as dentists when we go on these online forums or social media channels to see this. So why would it not be motivational for our ceramists
that are
doing the work, the digital designer, ceramist, technician, whatever we want to call it? But see, that ultimately for me goes back to owning a camera. And I'll tell you that not one in five dentists own a camera. Even
or so, a real camera.
Yeah, a real camera, yeah.
So I'd like to transition to a little bit to one that I wanted to kind of touch base on is that obviously we're a big CRAC office, and as we're moving towards more of a digital age in dentistry, the way we deal with labs, the way I think labs are going to it's going to change. Now, obviously, there's still a small percentage that's having scanners and that sort of thing, but as that continues to grow, how do you as a lab, how is the lab world changing with that, and how does the relationship with someone who's using digital dentistry, is that different than someone who's not? Talk a little bit about that, because obviously that has to be something that you're dealing with.
It is. We started the digital transition, I would say, I got out of school in 2004, and around 2007 or 2008, it started to come on with K-Dent. K-Dent must have come out around 2006 maybe, and we started to... My dad has grown the business. He's a super early adopter. I'm 35 years old. He's an earlier adopter than me. He orders the newest iPhone like as soon as you can order it, you know? And I'm like, I'll get it when it comes into the store, you know? That kept us up to date, and we were always ahead of it. So, and then when he kind of phased out of the business, I knew to stay on it full throttle. And I knew that we had to get as much of our work digital as we could before the dentist demanded it to be digital. Because if we waited for the dentist to start sending us files, well, then we're behind the eight ball. Everything we do was digital with the PVS impressions before you guys started buying the scanners. So the labs that didn't do that now... You know, they're out fishing and wishing that they had bought these systems and they're out of business. But
we have a local lab who we used for forever, but then it got to the point where, like, if I couldn't see it, connect them.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll find another lab. Like,
exactly.
Like, you know?
So everything that we do when it comes to Crown and Bridge is digitized to some degree. Some things are more than others. Like we have a high-end select department where we cut back and layer everything. Of course, you can't cut back and layer something and have somebody build up the powders with a computer. I mean, our temps are CAD-cammed. Our aesthetic wax-ups are CAD-cammed. Everything, you know what I'm talking about. When it comes to dealing with doctors who are digital, I don't think that the dentists that really want to use scanners and get into the whole, you guys know because you're CEREC doctors, but let's say somebody goes out and buys a 3-shape Trios and they want to do implant cases and they want to do everything with their scanner, I don't think that they really know how to utilize it to the full advantage without the lab's advice and feedback and collaboration. Like, What scan bodies do they buy? And what implant cases can they do them with? And will the workflow work with the lab? And does the lab know how to accept those files and process it? And it's like, it's a whole nother world than, can you do a metal occlusal on this case? You know, it's like you need to have tech wizards within the lab who know you have to use a Biodenta scan body to do a screw retain workflow with this titanium base on these implant platforms. And if you go to this scan body, it's not going to work because you don't have the DME files for the 3-shape and the company didn't make the DME files. So the scan body is worthless and they don't know that. And we know that and da da da. And it's so fragmented and the lab's really the one having to funnel it all down and make it work. So the difference in the interaction with the customers is the same. You know, it may be more email because they're on the computer. But I think that it's all catering to a younger generation. Like we have technicians and they may listen to this podcast. You know, they grew up with my dad and they're in the latter parts of their careers. They don't know what a DME file is. They don't know the importance that 3-shape have those implant geometries in order to do that case. They don't even know what that is, but they know what it is once it gets ready to go out the door and how it needs to look. And then we have this younger generation of technicians and people in the lab who are my age and younger, who they know all about that. They know more about it than I do.
How do they learn?
That's a great question.
They play video games as a kid.
They learn it. I'll tell you how they learn it. And I'm thinking of people right now in my mind. They're really sharp and they're really eager and they're like you. Look at you. How old are you?
30.
And look at the kind of cases that you do compared to your peers who are 45 and 50 and been doing it twice as long. They can't do what you do. You did it because you got into it and you just freaking love it. So they love it. They love all about the, you know, the digital, all this stuff.
But see, to me, I feel like I had a lot of mentors. I had a lot of people that I watched.
We have mentors in the lab. I said we've been digitizing the lab for about 12 years. So that we have people who've been along it the whole way, but they're our age, you know.
So you're saying there are opportunities, resources available to these people looking at them. And they can find, like,
you who, said, dentists,
for example. No, labs.
Oh, yeah. Labs. The manufacturers are training 3Shape, Exocad, right. Dental Wings.
That's something I don't training. Know. How do they get, to get fascinated and motivated to do these? Like, I want to be a badass.
If they want to keep a job, you have to learn digital dentistry today.
That's right. That's exactly
bottom
right.
Bottom line. I would fathom to believe that traditional restorative dentistry, 99% of those cases have some component of digital dentistry in them.
Oh, know? Absolutely.
Yeah, if not 100% at the end of the day.
So this is June. In May, last month, we did, not to give you like exact perfect figures, we did around 1,200 units. Without a model, you know, basically a CEREC case, but we're doing the case for them. So they're just emailing us their files and all this stuff. Yeah, digital impressions, but with no model. We're just printing a little die. And this time last year, it was around 200 to 300 units. So it's like tripled to quadrupled in 12 months. So, you know,
wow.
As leading the lab, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, you know,
what percentage is that? I mean, that's
it's still probably only like 7%.
It's still a small percentage,
you know, 10%.
And I guess it's confusing too, because we hang around people who are moving in the future, right? Like, so it feels like more than that should be more than that. But the reality is, I guess so many dentists are.
So actually, last month we would have done around, let's see, 12,000 units. So what's 12? It's 10%. 10%, and we're a good sampling of the market. We work in 50 states, and we're bread and butter.
I wouldn't say that it's a different sampling of the market, because, you know, the vast majority of labs still don't take digital cases.
That's true.
So if you're a digital office, you're pretty much drawn to a certain number of labs. I mean, more and more now than ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, your typical mom and pop lab doesn't do digital.
That's true. Okay?
That's what I mean by that. It's just that, unfortunately, you know, digital drives you to certain places.
That's true.
Or over others.
So, out of those 1,200, I'm sorry, out of curiosity, what percentage of that is CEREC versus Trios? And do you know, or how do
yeah,
you
Yeah, I do. I have a little pie chart I show in my lectures. And
so
I
what's
don't.
The majority of people right now using Introlo
scan? So if you had a pie, mm-hmm. like there's big three slices of it is Cadent, 3M, and Trios. And the super small sliver for us, because they're milling in-house, is CEREC and I guess it would be, what is it, PlanScan now?
Which makes sense, because for most, a lot of these other those other companies advertise it more as a scanner.
Exactly.
Than a in-office miller.
Yeah.
So what I would say primarily.
The one we see the least of is Carestream.
Right now. I mean, this will all change over time.
Yeah, now. That's
it'll
true.
It'll all change.
That's yeah. true.
I mean, I think right now 3Shape has a good stranglehold on the digital impression market. On the orthodontic side, it's iTero with Align Technologies. On the chairside side, CEREC has a vast majority market share there. So it just changes. And so all those things will change.
Where do you see the printing coming in?
I listened to the last podcast on the way up, and I forget his name.
Oh, Michael Scherer?
He talked a lot about he talked a lot about printing. I don't remember. Yeah, it was the last issue you guys had. Printing for a dentist?
Yeah, just where it's going to be involved, and like, 'cause I think that's a really big move.
You guys just bought a 3D, like you added another 3D printer.
We did. Carbon 3D, they're out of California. They're not a dental company. they've been selling their stuff. The CEO's name's Phil DeSimone, young guy. I went out there actually when the ADA was in San Francisco, the national meeting. I drove down to Silicon Valley to Carbon 3D. And this was San Francisco ADA was maybe 3 years ago, but they've been developing that now for dental for several years. And we got Argon in San Diego got one, and we got the second one.
So does it do metal?
It's a burnout or plastic material. It's not a metal printer. But what's so nice about it is the speed. Like when we print our models, we were using another company. I won't mention the name. But it was taking us like 6 hours per job to run a set of digital per print per build size. And this one, it takes about an hour and 20. And so it's awesome. Like for rush cases and stuff, like, you know, doctor needs something right away. Okay, you just print the model.
Are you digitizing nearly all your impressions at this point?
So that's a good question. As of last month, we just started scanning PVS with a 3-shape. And so far that's going really well. We're like selective on the
it has to be the right prep. The impression it can't have significant undercuts in it.
It can't have that. I don't want it to have a lot of pulls in it and drags and stuff. It needs to be a nice impression, but that's funny you mentioned that, cause it's been a hot topic here lately in our lab, but we're pulling the impressions. We scan them with 3-shape. We mill or print the crown, print out a little die that has the order number on it so we don't mix it up and send it to the wrong doctor. And we just sent it out with no model. They sent us a polyvinyl impression, and we're like, the managers in the lab, they're like, well, what do you want to do when they call and the doctor says, ward my model? And I said, well, tell them we didn't need to make a model. They didn't pay for the model. The invoice says so crown, guys, not model.
You guys aren't making as many stone models now?
We're trying to drop it back, you know? And my sister starts freaking out. She's like, the customer service people, they're going to be calling and saying, where's my model? So, and I'm like, they don't look at the crown on the model. So we made these little cards, you know, that we send out with these cases. You know, this case was scanned, digitized, and da-da-da. But
it costs about $12 to make a model.
It does.
Stone model.
It does. Yeah. And you have inaccuracies in the stone.
Yeah. A human being plus the stone cost. It costs about $12 per case to make a model.
That's right. Yeah. You should run a lab. You know.
I know. Unfortunately.
He probably owns one or two.
I did. Yeah.
That'd be a funny story to hear about this.
No, that's $12 at his size. You know, Glidewell does it for a little bit less. But they have an ice cream machine that spits out the stone, so
they sell a little easier on that.
But okay, so I'm sorry I didn't fully answer the question. With the printers, we've been using our printers for.
Are you printing? You're not printing crowns yet. You're not printing
We just print plastic and burnout materials, and surgical guides and stuff like that.
How far? What's the limitation factor on printing a crown versus milling a CAD CAM crown or something like that? Is it
so
materials
so,
time?
So we could have a selective laser melting machine, but that's going to put you back into metal. You know, there's no on the market right now FDA approved additive. We're talking about additive technology to do a ceramic crown or a zirconia crown. I know that companies are working on materials that are additive that you go straight from the printer to the mouth, instead of having to burn out and press Emax. And
question
kind of
on that
thing.
Is going to be porosities and different things like
so
that.
So it takes me back. I don't, Payman won't know this, but I was in high school back when wool ceram was a big product for my dad. And you know, like
shoop over our heads.
Yeah. So like wool ceram was like, you know, it was so amazing.
Slip casting?
Yes. Yeah, so it was like one of the first generations of a metal free crown. So basically, it was like an additive technology. It had a little bowl of alumina mixed up into a slurry. Alumina is like a ceramic. Yeah. So they would electrostatic the dye, get it charged where it has a electrostatic, and they would dip it in that slurry So all the aluminum particles would like draw to the die, and then you'd stick that in an oven and center it. Well, like Tarun's saying, in the slip cast, what can you imagine the distance between those particles in a slip slurry versus a disc that's in hydrostatically pressed under how many PSI? So all the crowns broke because the freaking the aluminum's all too far apart from each other. It's got porosity all in it. So I don't know how they're going to overcome that hurdle.
They will over time. Yeah. Maybe they're going to have to be some type of furnacing afterwards or something along those lines to condense it down. Or, you know, or hydrostatic pressure printers. You never know what's going to come out.
So with the printers, we're always trying new stuff.
How much was that printer? I'm sorry to ask.
Like, it's actually a lease, so you can't buy that printer. You have to pay like $40,000 a year, and you have to subscribe and do it for 3 years, and then send it back, and they can send you a new one. And it's kind of a weird model, but needless to say, it's the best printer we've used to date. Carbon 3D. It's $40,000, but they don't have a desktop version. And I want to talk about this because this is pertaining to the doctors. Okay, we bought two form labs.
Form ones or form twos?
Form twos. Back when they first came out. And we sold them on eBay a couple months ago.
Oh gosh, don't make me return.
We've opened ours and ran them.
No, but the difference is, when a dentist buys a Form Labs, more than likely they're going to be buying that to print models to do suck downs. They're going to print it to do mouth guards and
fidget spinners.
And what?
Fidget spinners.
Fidget spinners and so okay, so. This takes me to
I see those.
Surgical guides. There are doctors who use form labs to print surgical guides. But when it comes to the lab, we tried in both locations, in our Mobile lab in Huntsville, we tried to use form labs for Crown and Bridge. We were printing crowns and Crown and Bridge models with dies and margins and everything. It was not accurate nor consistent enough to be used for a margin on a crown. I mean, it's kind of all over the place. It's too inconsistent. Right. It has to be spot on for a margin. So how accurate does the surgical guide need to be if it's not acceptable for a lab to use for crowns? I mean, when you do a surgery, it doesn't matter if it's 50 microns to the left or the right, right?
I mean, think it matters.
But I'm not a surgeon. I don't know. But dentists are going to be buying these to do surgical guides with.
Sure.
Well, pilot drill, right? Yeah, I mean, you're not going to...
It'll depend, I guess.
The pilot drill is no good if it doesn't fit.
Yeah, then your pilot drill's off half a millimeter.
I mean, everything's about fit, correct?
But the restoration's made after the implants are placed. What do you mean fit? Fit of
the
what?
The fit of the guide.
Oh, like, yeah. The guide's it's off. A tooth-borne guide.
Yeah, I mean, majority of them are tooth-borne guides. So.
Well, if it would... It's accurate enough for that, I think.
Yeah, tooth-borne are the most accurate ones you can get.
But what I'm saying is...
It has limitations.
It does. Sure. It's a question in my mind, like, how accurate do the guides need to be? We print our guides on an objet, and we use the same printer to print our cast frameworks, and those need to be super accurate, you know? You have all these rests and everything, and you cross in the span of the arch and all that. But anyway,
when will you be able to print night guards from a digital impression directly without having to go? What's the whole of that?
You can do that now. You can do it now.
So I can send you a digital impression and basically
we wouldn't do it that way, but you could.
You're still going to print a model and then
we would print a model,
make it off a model.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why
then you charge your 20 lecture model fee?
No, we don't charge for models.
Okay.
If we send you a product, we don't charge you for the model. If you send me a scan and you say, print me 20 models, I want to do blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, you would.
What, I'm going to charge you for a little bit for the models. But no, we don't charge for the models. But it goes to your point. Why would I charge for the models when it's saving me money on the model? The model's going to cost me $12 to make. I can print it for way less than that.
Yeah, about $3.50. So yeah.
So I'm not going to charge you. It doesn't cost me $20.
Yeah, that makes total
it saves
sense.
Me money.
Great Lakes is charging me, so might be getting some night guards.
Hey, that's fine. My
way. Well, why don't you guys go direct digital on the night guards yet?
You can make a night guard so cheap that to buy a machine just to do night guards and that's one issue. Another issue is I'm not sure there's an FDA-approved night guard printable material, that long term.
Who cares
in the
about
mouth.
Nightguards? Let's talk about dentures.
Yeah, let's talk about
what,
okay.
Why not dentures? Yeah. Like okay, so what is it stopping from doing the same day denture using guides? Using these 3D printers, immediate
materials.
So
material
FDA approved materials.
Yeah, that's a huge hurdle.
Is everything? Sorry, just a quick caveat to this is because I've questioned this about like using foreign lab materials and stuff for surgery. What all has to be FDA approved?
Everything that's medical.
Anything that goes in the mouth.
Yeah, anything that goes in the mouth needs to be FDA approved.
Even if it's for a short amount of time.
There's FDA approvals for a short period of time as
well. That's right. It depends on the duration.
No, but like, so for example, if you print a guide out of the form grade material, that's not FDA approved for intraoral use. Okay, so their clear or their dental resin is FDA approved. I don't know
short
the exact
term, probably.
1 hour, 2 hour use, less than 24 hour use in the mouth. Okay, so therein lies the challenge that we have is a denture is a how many wear for how many years, correct? And that's the challenge that I think and that's a good conversation to have as well. I think for our listeners is not all labs are equal in this sense because. You need to be using FDA material. So if you're importing your zirconia blanks from China, from non-FDA approved sources, and now they're being put in your patient's mouth.
Well, how do they know? How do they know if it's FDA approved or not?
You have to ask the lab. I mean, then I don't
get the documentation from the lab.
Yeah, the lab technically okay. should be sending. Well, the lab should be sending you a sticker or something.
A dental lawyer or Dentsurround.
Yeah, with every case that provides.
We don't know these in school. Like,
yeah, I have no idea.
We don't, but these are important things to understand. Okay, so because at the end of the day, the liability falls on the dentist.
It does.
Okay, so at the end of the day, when you put XYZ in the patient's mouth, just for example, it's absolutely illegal for you to ask for a Bruxier crown and for a lab without informing you and getting your permission to give you another zirconia, generic zirconia brand, because it's illegal. Your prescription is very specific. Just like when you write a medical prescription, it says substitution permitted or dispense as direct or dispense per brand, correct? Mm-hmm. It would be illegal for that pharmacy to give your patient a different brand of Vicodin or whatever if you wrote use only this brand. So, and I think that's one of the areas where dentists are not specific or requesting the information. For example,
part of, I think is those. How was I supposed to know that? I mean, where would
It's your job to know,
well, right?
In my opinion, it's your job to know. Well, you are a licensed professional, right? At the end of the day,
you know, 2% lidocaine, you're going to write it every day. So why not know exactly the crown material?
But see, this became very apparent to me when I started doing sleep appliances, because sleep appliances to get reimbursed through medical insurance, many times they're going to ask for the FDA approval on those. Okay. So if you have a lab that's making their own sleep appliance, that's not FDA approved.
We got FDA inspected in March.
Yeah.
First time in 46 years.
So I think for the listeners, look, you're putting a precision instrument or a precision item in a patient's mouth. There are metals that leach from it. There are ceramic things that leach from it. At the end of the day, you're talking about biocompatibility. I'm not trying to be scare tactics, but just pick up the phone and work with qualified people on this. Yeah. I'm not saying it has to be Oral Arts. I'm not saying it has to be Gladwell. I'm not saying it has to be anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's
a good
onus,
conversation to have.
But
with
the
people.
Onus is on you as the practitioner. It's your damn license that's on the line when you do this stuff. And when you get into medical devices, when you start getting into implants or even implant restorations, that's a different level of restoration than a crown. A crown is a tooth-borne restoration. It's a different level of FDA clearance or a different level of what's required there than suddenly when you're doing it on an implant. Because labs went through this with tie bases and custom abutments that were hybrid tie bases where only certain brands were approved, FDA approved, and certain ones weren't. And it's an important conversation to have. Whether it's stupid or not stupid, the government, whatever it is, but at the end of the day, if it's your license on the line, your ability to make an income, it's ultimately
specifically
important.
On implant, because you mentioned it, Oral Arts, I want to mention and give a shout out to you guys, because I was using other labs that I was getting abutment screws from third party people. That was not even my manufacturer implant that I put in.
Well, it depends. If you ask for a authentic component, you should get authentic
but
components.
But see, you're, as a dentist, you're writing it because you're automatically thinking they're going to send you authentic.
Depends what you're paying. What do you expect to get for $200 or $300?
Right. So that's a good point, because yeah, I want to mention to people.
You can't expect
if you're
to get
bragging,
that.
If you're bragging about how cheap you pay your lab, make sure that you are getting the right authentic parts.
Unless you own your lab.
Exactly.
Right. Because at the end of the day, zirconia discs are $300 or $250 whatever they are. It costs $8 per mil $8 to $12 per mil right. for a zirconia crown. But then there's the human factor that goes into it. The boxing, the unboxing, the shipping.
No, I love the fact that Oral Arts, what they do, they give me a package. And then there's a screw that says final abutment. And that the actual BioHorizons tag on it. And I just...
And you're paying for that service.
And that's exactly. True. Yeah. And I like that. But other labs, there's a ton of labs I've used that they don't do that.
Well, most doctors don't care, Payman, to be quite honest with you. They don't care that that screw's authentic.
I don't want that patient to come back. I want them to see their back of their head once.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. As a lab, why would the lab send a $50 authentic screw to 100% of the clients when only 20% of the clients care that it's authentic?
No, it's...
So we send the authentic screw to the doctors who want the authentic screw, just like he said. That's exactly how it is. So it goes back to the prescription. If you say implant crown number 22,
you got you carte blanche to the lab.
Exactly. We can do whatever we want.
that's a majority of what we see.
That thing is not FDA thing.
We're not sending you anything that's non-FDA.
We're talking about too much lube. 342 technicians.
No, we're not going to risk that.
They can't risk that, right?
Right.
But there are certain labs, and again, I'm not talking about majority.
Sure.
Okay, the minority here, okay? I think the outsourcing of lab stuff to overseas is going to become less and less as we become more digitized. Digitization is is what's going to allow us to overcome outsourcing overseas to a certain degree.
Don't you think labor is going to cost less overseas than here? So most of the things we're paying is
labor. What's the labor here? Most labs still have to bring the case in. They still have to ship it. You don't ship it direct to China. You ship it to somewhere here, somebody's going to turn around, then they're going to turn around, right? So, I mean, what may happen is the digital design may go overseas, but the manufacturing
will stay. Like radiologists.
Yeah, the manufacturing will still stay here. Again, not $39 crowns.
Sure.
Okay, but I'm talking about at least $79, $89 crowns.
Well, I do kind of start to think that when you hear people talk about what they're getting and what they're paying, and it's okay, well, at some point, like you said, there is a minimal cost for something to cost. So, you can only
everybody has to make a profit,
right? So everybody kind of wonder what you're really getting when you're paying that.
On
low
a total side note, and I don't want to overtake this. That's why I told you not to give me a microphone.
We'll just edit you out. It's fine.
No, but it's a time, right? I think, and this is big to me right now. Is I think as a profession, we have to support our manufacturers that drive innovation. If we all are looking for $39, $49, $59, $79 crowns, whatever it is, where is the money for innovation to come about? Where are we going to get Katana multi-layered zirconia materials? Where are we going to get Glidewell developing Bruxir and essentially inventing the solid zirconia market? None of that exists if we don't support our companies. And if we don't, and we have to, we have to. So at some point, like with the implants, okay, when you buy $100 implants, you're not supporting innovation. There's no margin in $100 implants. Even for research, because a lot of the research is somewhat irrelevant, but for the future research. Right. These implants that'll be, you know, more biocompatible, that'll be, you know, that'll integrate in 4 weeks or whatever it is. That stuff doesn't come from $100 implants.
It's not even the implants anymore. I was talking to my friend of mine. He was like, oh, dude, I'm getting $75 implant. I'm like, who cares? I mean, what about the prosthetic? Now, of course, that's titanium because it's titanium. But what about all the pieces that you got to put in the back? I mean, how do you know? And then what are you going to
put? But does it matter, really? Is there a difference?
I mean, you never know.
You never know, right?
You never know.
You don't think big implant companies don't make mistakes in the manufacturing process?
It goes back to FDA.
Yeah. You know, so that's ultimately the question. And really, to a certain degree in all of this, you're paying for the layers of sales.
Sure.
You know? Is what it really boils. A lot of it boils down to. So let me ask a question, okay? Because your guys' podcast really is geared to a younger crowd. Let's say, correct? So how does a younger dentist balance starting a practice? Every dollar matters. Finding a good lab. From your perspective, what are the questions a young practitioner should be asking a laboratory to find out if it's the right fit for them?
I can't help but say, sadly, the majority of young dentists I know are at corporate, number one. So they don't get to ask that question because they don't have control of that answer. Their bosses are saying...
Well, let's pretend.
Yeah. So you throw out the 80% they're at Pacific or Heartland or wherever else they are.
The number's 62%, but that's okay.
The young dentists that we work for that are recently out of school need help. And I say that with all gentleness and sincerity I can, not that I know everything and then we're so great, but the graduating dentist, there's so much that they don't know when it comes to how to make their case work and how what they, or more so, what does the lab need to make that crown a success? They need to work with a lab who's going to teach them all that. How does the lab do that? Number one, the lab has to have really experienced people who can be on the phone and spend time with them and look at their case and say, you know, hey, Dr. Rossi, you know, I see you got, sent us your first case here and blah, blah, blah. And you know, you asked for this, but you gave us that. And going to talk with them and teach them because they just don't know. And they don't know what they don't know. So it goes back to what I said about dental school. If they leave school and they don't, they've never communicated with the lab, they've dealt with an intermediary. Now all of a sudden they have to do this stuff by themselves. It's going to take a lab who brings them under their wing, let's say, and teaches them the lab side of the world, what the lab needs to make this stuff a success. And not every lab can do that. I mean, if you send that case, and I could mention 10 names right now, you send that case to blank, and that case goes where Tarun was talking about. It gets put in a box with 150 other impressions and goes to Vietnam. Do you think that that person is going to call that doctor in Tampa, Florida, and say, hey, you know, I really need, next time you need to do this and that? They're going to slap the thing on there and ship it back for the $25. And that's it. They just need to work with a lab who's really customer service oriented and who will do that. It takes time to do that.
I think it's hard too. I was very fortunate going in with Dad to be kind of taught early on and mentored the importance of developing that relationship, doing a lot of these things like going to the lab guy, calling and when you send your first couple of cases and asking questions and saying, what could I have done better? What could we have done here? And really, I think that's the thing that I would say we need to pass on and do more is to realize that we don't know everything, to continue to invest in our education and realize that the lab can be a huge integral partner in that. And that ultimately, there's more to it than a bottom line.
You know, right.
Sometimes you're going to spend more money to make more money. I mean, that's a big thing that we talk about and going and taking more education and spending that money, because those two things are what has allowed us to be really successful early on is listening to our mentors, being humble in that and not getting that we don't know everything, right. and then investing in our education.
Even if that you mentioned a lot of young dentists being in the corporate, I mean, most of the audience, if anybody is listening to that corporate, find out who is controlling that corporate, what lab are they using, and get to know what they're doing and how can you communicate with that lab. And because that's the thing where I always ask questions. I was like, why are we doing this the way that we are? Like, why not change it? Or why not find out more? And that's where I started questioning a lot of things. And there is a lot of people were open to that. And they were like, wow. And I'm talking CEOs and CFOs are like, wow, you're the first one who actually asked, like, why not move or why not do this guy and that guy? Because I was like, why not find out what are we doing right now and how can we make it better and things like that nature. Meaning, I don't want to say, oh, because I'm in corporate, because that's the thought process behind a lot of people. Dentists thinking, oh, well, I'm in the corporate, I'm not going to get. No, start asking questions. Start finding out why are they doing the things they are doing. And then you say, I'm the doctor, I'm the DDS behind it. I want to use this lab. I want to use that lab because I want to have the communication with my lab. And just because it's your name on it, as much as you say it's Aspen or Heartland or all these corporates, it's your DDS. The patient is going to remember you. And that's the thing where you start asking questions and find out who your lab is, who is actually making. I know all my lab right now, especially in my big cases, I know who made it. I want to know who made it because this is a personal touch. My patients know who made it.
Right.
My patients know what lab they actually used, and that's important to me.
Well, and you're such a great example, too, of that 60, 70, 80% or whatever it is that is in corporate that, look, you can take full advantage. It doesn't have to be this terrible thing that you wanted to go do and be in. I mean, you were a prime example of someone who took full advantage of what corporate had to offer. And
the best and example.
You know, take advantage of all that education, all that CE, getting to see the lab in-house. I mean, so that's really the thing that you should, you know, people should look at. Guys, this has been
a blast.
It's been fun.
And it's amazing. I can't talk enough about lab and the side of lab. Now, I'm very passionate about lab, obviously, and my patients know, like, if I don't like it, I've had patients, and I'm not kidding, 6 times I send it back if I don't like it. 6 times they travel. And if I don't like it and the patient likes it, I'm going to still send it back. I don't care if they like it. I'm not going to put my name behind it. So the more I love to mention the lab part about doing what the podcast is and the young dentist, because ultimately it's the communication and the relationship you make with the lab. Every case I love to, and I'm humbled to say that it's not me, it's my team. And my team includes my lab and my assistant chairside and my telephone, my scheduler and receptionist. So it's huge for all the dentists out there to know that the lab is a big, big part of it. And I'm very happy to have
Thank
Matt
you for having
today.
Well said, yeah. Thank you for having
him
me.
For our podcast.
It's super awesome.
It's huge. Yes. Thank you for coming.
I will be famous forever in iTunes world.
Dude, you watch out.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, dude.
You might be blowing you up. All right, man. Well, work smarter, not harder.
That's it.
Exactly.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.